Good morning and welcome to, how about that, the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and we're going to have a really interesting guest. Be in about a half hour, we're going to be talking to Yakov Rabkin. He has written a really sharp, and it's a compact book, and it's titled Zionism Decoded in 101 Quotes. And it is what they call, people say, a fact-filled volume. We're in a really difficult time on this whole issue of the fate of the Palestinian people, the question of what's going to happen to Gaza. I know we have a board has been established by Mr. Kushner and his father-in-law, I think it is, Donald Trump. So it's kind of a business operation involving destroying hospitals, homes, and mosques, and moving populations. It's a flickering, sometimes burning headline because of the loss of life, but basically also a loss of direction. It isn't clear who will address this matter in a way that is compassionate and truly seeking a humanitarian solution. That would be one that accommodates the needs of people, number one, and their respects their rights. But already I'm editorializing on a subject that we will be asking Mr. Rabkin about. I'd, by the way, just tell you, there's a whole new scoop, to my mind, in the past 10 years has really developed a new group, new names, and more scholarship in terms of researching the issue of the establishment of Israel, the position of the Palestinians, the so-called two-state solution. There's been more work done. I don't mean they're just, you know, starting up fresh arguments, but there's more research. And one of the individuals who's become known and is a very qualified historian and author is Ian Pape, I think it's probably pronounced. And he's written a book called 10 Myths About Israel. He is endorsing quite enthusiastically the book by Yakov Rabkin. Yakov Rabkin is, has authored hundreds of articles and several books, including Science Between the Superpowers and A Threat from Within, A Century of Jewish Opposition to Zionism. That pretty much be the theme today. What is modern Israel? And he is a professor emeritus of history at the University of Montreal, and we'll be talking to him later in the program. Another individual who has become, I'd say, a prominent voice and one that really needs to be listened to, primarily because his political history, his own personal role in U.S. Inside the U.S. government, that would be Jeffrey Sachs. And as a veteran political advisor, I guess we would call him, and also a policymaker, he knows, he has participated in all the big meetings, the ones that you and I don't attend and don't know much about. He's been at the table with Presidents Clinton and Bush and others, and he's has a reputation well-earned for his clear understanding of the issues and quite well-spoken. And he has endorsed this book of Yakov Rabkin. That book is Zionism Decoded in 101 Quotes. I want to thank everybody. It's been supporting our station, supporting CIUT. We very, as we always say, we're proud of our listeners. When we say, well, you know, you want public radio, you want community radio, you want roots radio, all appropriate terms, and we do get the support, and we're very pleased with that. And we got a lot of income, and people did donate, and I believe we went over our $100,000 target. And I want to tell those people who have donated, you should by now, if you donated at CIUT.fm, you would have received your tax receipt. So if you haven't, you might contact us, I suppose, or let us know. But the tax receipts have been sent, and it's important to you, as well as the T-shirt issue, which we have. Remember, we have the $200 T-shirt. There were two, if you had two, and of course, for I think one was 120. I forget my numbers. At any rate, a lot of people are eligible for those T-shirts, and you can pick the shirts up at CIUT Heart House between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m., Mondays through Friday, I believe. And so the T-shirts are available 10 to 6. Please come and pick them up. If we happen to be around, please come in and say hello. We're really, Taylor Report was very thrilled by the kind of support we received. And it's always my pleasure to, and Pedro will join me in this, to see, to meet people who support CIUT and support the Taylor Report, because it's a learning experience. We always find out what people like, what they would like us to improve, or suggestions for guests, and all kinds of ideas. And believe me, we're proud of the fact that we actually act on suggestions. And we do learn a lot from people who can contribute and donate. And so please keep it up. And you always remember, by the way, if you're in a warm, friendly mood, you can go to CIUT.fm, and you can always donate 24/7, 365 days, if I've got the right number for the year. So again, this is the Taylor Report, and I want to update you on something important we've been talking about on the program, and that is the importance of relations with China. And to my mind, I'm sure it's on the minds of listeners, we understand now that we're in a world, even the Prime Minister admits it, where there's not just one center of power, and also you can't live as though there was or is one, because the current leadership of the United States, and actually whether it's Biden or Trump, the U.S. is hegemonic and basically says it is, because they define themselves as an exception. It's almost related to what we're going to be talking to Yakov Rabkin about, because there seems to be an idea that God created the United States as a promised land, and they therefore have a special dispensation, and they will define what is best for them, and also, whether we like it or not, what is best for us. So, and one of the outstanding questions that has to be handled smartly, intelligently, rationally, is relations with the People's Republic of China, which has become I'll use bourgeois language, an economic success story. They are the leading manufacturer of electrical vehicles. They're making all kinds of advances in science and technology. They have auto plants where there are no lights on because there's nobody in there but machines. And you have to say, do not look upon them as being a country that needs your guidance. They're doing quite well. By the way, we emphasize here at the Taylor Report that China historically is our ally. We had fought a war against fascism, and China was our ally in that. And those with whom we were allied are in the leading the current government of China, and on the island of Taiwan, which is also called officially, I know this will be news to people, the Republic of China. And Canada and the United States once regarded the Republic of China, which some people call Taiwan, as China. That if you were to go back to the 40s, late 40s, early, well, throughout the 50s, what am I talking about, through 60s, Canada and the U.S. said that those governing Taiwan were actually governing the entire country, territory of China. That was our position. Now, there are, I would say, some who want to, and now want to reverse course, and now instead of calling it the Republic of China, they call it Taiwan, and then they want Taiwan to be independent and or play games of being independent. That's a very dangerous course. So therefore, that brings me to my point. We know that Wang Yi, foreign minister of China, was in Ottawa. And so there's been discussion here what all that means. The nub of it for the Taylor Report is it means that there's one China. That's where we have to put our foot down, as it were, and we have to grow up. Because the Trump administration, and there are other states, Germany now, and others who want to play games with this island, which is part of China, called Taiwan. And therefore, the following is rather important. I'm going to read to you not what is being reported here, but what is being said in Beijing. And this is what the Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson said. They were asked the question. Foreign Minister Wang Yi just came back after his visit to Canada. Could you share more information on the visit? And Lin Jian, who is the spokesperson, says, at the invitation of Canadian Foreign Minister Anita Anand, Foreign Minister Wang Yi paid an official visit to Canada from May 28 to 30. It was the first visit by a Chinese foreign minister to Canada in 10 years. During the visit, Foreign Minister Wang Yi met with Prime Minister Mark Carney, held talks with Foreign Minister Anita Anand, and met with former Prime Minister Jean Chrétien and other friends. They had candid, in-depth, and constructive exchanges in advancing the China-Canada new strategic partnership and international and regional issues of mutual interest, reaching many common understandings and outcomes. Both sides spoke highly of the progress made in bilateral relations since Prime Minister Carney's visit in January and agreed to strengthen dialogue and communication, deepen mutually beneficial cooperation, expand people-to-people and cultural exchanges, enhance coordination in multilateral fora, and contribute to reforming and improving global governance. The two sides agreed to establish a strategic dialogue mechanism. That's important. The two foreign ministers, between the two foreign ministers, and restart the political and security consultation between the two foreign ministers and the high-level national security and rule of law dialogue. Foreign Minister Wang Yi noted that under the strategic guidance of the leaders of the two countries, China-Canada relations were steered back on course and onto the right track, which serves the interests of both countries and meets the expectations, of all parties. What the two sides can learn best from the ups and downs in bilateral ties is the importance of mutual respect, seeking common ground while shelving differences, strategic independence, and win-win results. China is ready to work with Canada to follow through on the important common understandings reached between the two countries' leaders, and explore ways to advance the China-Canada new strategic partnership, prepare for Prime Minister Carney's trip to China after the APEC Economic Leaders Meeting, and move relations forward on the track of sound, steady, and sustainable growth. The Canadian side stressed that Canada attached high importance to relations with China and is dedicated to moving forward the two sides' new strategic partnership. Canada firmly adheres to the One China policy, a position that will not change Canada supports China in hosting the APEC Economic Leaders Meeting this year. It is honored to attend the China International Import Expo 2026 as a guest country of honor and hopes to increase its export to China by 50% by 2030. Now that is, that's from the horse's mouth. This is the Chinese view of their discussions, their foreign minister's discussion in Ottawa. You know, let me say something about that. They call themselves media. I think every word that I just read to you should be posted in every Canadian newspaper, and should be read or available at anything calling itself a news site, because without an informed population, correctly informed, you can't have rational discourse. I understand. I'm not arguing that the Globe, the Star, the CBC can't call on these people that have a degree in one course or another, who work for the government from time to time, who, if they want to interpret, if they want to explain, if they want to say there's a problem or there's not a problem, of course, they should be heard. But it's like being in a courtroom in a sense. What common documents are we working from? What did they say? Because that has to be the foundation of a rational discussion. What we have is so-called mainstream capitalist media, frankly, is interpretive reporting, where they say, well, the minister said so-and-so, but we know that he's actually going to do the opposite, or he's actually a bad person, or we understand his sister-in-law is in trouble with the law. This kind of trickery, and it's very damaging to rational discourse, and that's why I'm making it more and more a habit to check what the any foreign ministry of any country is saying, their own words, so that we can, if and when we do any commentary, people know what the text is of what we call the other. By the way, this is CIUT 89.5 FM. Maybe this is a good time to. I'm going to add one more point. Pedro is now trying to figure out what I'm up to. Pedro is the magician who handles the board, as they say. I don't even know what goes on over there. That's to keep me from damaging anything. So there is a second point that they make. Instead of reading this one, I'll summarize it for you. The second question of the day, and when I say the day, I'm talking about today. The Chinese foreign ministry spokesman is asked, what about the comment of a leading Japanese politician that Japan is concerned that there is a state in the region, they're alluding to China, he did not name China, but he says it has a large army and missiles and nuclear weapons, and therefore with the implication that Japan ought to have the same. And so the foreign ministry spokesperson says, let's remember something. The reason Japan is in the situation it is because it launched World War II primarily, and the big focus was on China. And there were millions of people died in that war. It was a war of conquest by the Japanese, which ultimately failed, but it lasted for 4 years, and it was immense loss of life, and therefore Japan was surrendered, and they agreed that they weren't going to be any longer a military power, that they would not seek to be a military regional power, and that's in their constitution. Their constitution. And now we're getting this odd talk about, oh, maybe they should have a nuclear weapon. No, that's, let's go back to how World War II started. And who are these people who, many of whom celebrate attend a cemetery where the Japanese warlords, the ones who waged World War II on Canada, U.S., Britain, France, but primarily the people of Asia, the Korean people, the Korea, and China. And so we came to the terms that we came to, and Japan has flourished. There's no problem in terms of, there's problems. There's always class issues, but the issue of the status of Japan, that isn't entirely within Japan's capacity to decide. And Canada should be, I left you at the cemetery, didn't I? At the cemetery where Japanese leaders, including the current prime minister, provide money, as part of a ritual, but also they attend, the warlords are there, a very famous one named Tojo. And he was convicted of war crimes, and they were horrific. There's no debating it. Why would they do that? Because remember, Tojo's victims included Canadians. I shouldn't make a nationalistic point of it, but I mean, please, everybody understand history. So this is a dangerous situation. And when Canada says it's going to recognize, it does affirm that there's one China, they have to notice that the Prime Minister of Japan is starting to fudge that subject, and she's not so sure that Taiwan is part of China. She said there's a dangerous game. So these things are all important. This is why we talk about them on the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And I think we have a piece of music by Bob Dylan called With God on Our Side. And then we'll be coming back and we'll be talking to Yakov Rabkin.
Books tell it, they tell it so well. The cavalry's charge, the Indians fell. The cavalry's charge, the Indians died. For the country was young with God on its side. American war had its day, and the Civil War too was soon laid away, and the names of the heroes I was made to memorize, with guns in their hands and God on their side. The First World War, boys, it closed out its fate.
And we're back. It is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. That was, I said Bob Dylan, but if you were wondering who that second voice was, somebody probably that listener to CIUT knows, Joan Baez. People would say, boy, those were the days, weren't they? Dylan and Baez singing With God on Our Side, when, they, of course, they were worried about the tendency of the world's leading superpower to involve itself in bombing other peoples of the earth in order to have their way. And the justification, as always happens, is it it's God that wants this. It's so painful to watch something, an individual like Haig Smith, Secretary of War, he calls himself, standing in front of a crowd of military, by the way, soldiers, I guess, and quoting the Bible. And it turns out it wasn't the Bible. It was something somebody saw in a movie. It was somebody had made, you know. So he would say, well, it's ballpark. As long as there's blood and massacres. So that it was good that Dylan called this out. And really, that's kind of our topic today is the invocation of the wishes of God, as interpreted by people like Haig Smith, who is, of course, obviously a biblical scholar. If he can make up quotes in the Bible, he must be a scholar. So that's the kind of dangerous place we are living. So once again, we're trying to reach Yakov Rabkin. We hope we'll have him shortly. I wanted to, I could mention this book, Zionism Decoded, decoded in 101 quotes, is the source of the circumstances of the discussion of the state of Israel and its conduct, and the tie-in with something called Christian Zionism, which is very fundamental. And I'll just say, we can, of course, ask Professor Rapkin about it, there's a literalist thing going on where, with the development of Christian Zionism, it was tied in, as Rapkin's book shows, with the development of Protestantism and the idea that took hold of a literalist interpretation of the what Christians call the Old Testament, and it led to a thinking that there was some kind of project, and there, where God was planning something for Jerusalem. And as he points out, this goes all the way back to Isaac Newton, was among the people who, because he was a Protestant, who was trying to figure, trying to calculate, from after his studies of the Bible, what was going to unfold. And how it should unfold. And he argued, Newton did, and many Protestants over the years have argued, for an ingathering of, that would be the return of the Jews to the land of holiness, I understand is the correct way to put it, the land of holiness. And this would bring about, somehow, for some reason, the return of the Messiah. This is a really, if you're a political person living in 2026, you say, you know, this could have, believing that could have some rather severe political consequences. So the book, this book explains where that is, these ideas come from. And but please meditate on that thought, that there is this involves the notion, and you've certainly heard it. I think anyone who lives in North America has encountered a school of thought amongst what are called evangelicals, who are number in the millions, tens of millions, who have the idea of end times. And they used to try to do it mathematically, and I guess Newton must have tried to do it, Isaac Newton. But in our own epoch, period of history, we have a situation where we have had end of times spokesperson who founded churches and some of the Protestant groups have actually done their math, and they've just, by being literalist, taking all the information that they could from the Bible, told their followers that, okay, you know, on November 3rd, 1866 or something, there's going to be, it'll be the end, world's going to be coming to an end, and the Messiah is going to appear. And thousands of people were told to appear on a certain mountain. Didn't happen just once. It's happened several times under different leaders. And they were to await this moment. So it's a school of thought. I use the word thought. But at any rate, this idea is still quite strong. I mean, after all, there is the issue of the Messiah and the return of the Messiah, if you're going to be talking about Christian theology, Jewish, Islamic, actually, the monotheistic faith. And it's a, unfortunately, or they would say fortunately, it bleeds into, mixes in our current political language more and more. And this will be something we'll be asking Yaakov Rabkin about. In order to acquaint myself with developments, I would like to get a little music in this from some lovely singers, I think. No, it's not. It's not lovely singers. I believe we're going to, in a moment or two, be hearing from Honey and the Rock. If not, it'll be called A Great Surprise. But we'll try to acquaint ourselves here with the situation and get, so that we get Mr. Rabkoff. Rabkin. There we are. So I'm the surprise guest. This is Phil Taylor. This is the Taylor Report. And our seasoned listeners will know occasionally this happens. And I was speaking of our guest to come. It's like waiting for the Messiah, Yaakov Rabkin. I think I just called him something else moments ago. So there's going to be, we do music? Good. We're very happy. We're going to have a little music, and then I will make more sense on the other side.
Freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom until the killing of black men, black mothers' sons, is as important as the killing of white men, white mothers' sons. We who believe in freedom and God, freedom cannot rest. That which touches me most is that I had a chance to work with people, passing on to others that which was passed on to me.
And we're back. Now I understand. Mr. Rabkin is a, by the way, a very much in demand around the world as a scholar and author. And so we understand he's abroad, and so we're making the link with him by Zoom. I want to resume something here while we're arranging this. I'll just read to you this point about Japan and their new position, their attempt to reposition themselves. And the Chinese say the following, the remarks from the Japanese official you mentioned have no basis at all. They have zero authority in front of history, law, facts, and figures. There is no way that making such remarks will help Japan earn the trust of its Asian neighbors and the international community. Japanese militarists committed horrendous crimes in World War II, inflicted untold suffering on Asian neighbors and allied nations. with the aim of preventing the revival of Japanese militarism, a series of instruments with legal effect under international law, including the Cairo Declaration, the Potsdam Proclamation, clearly require clearly require Japan to be completely disarmed and not to maintain such industries as would enable her to rearm for war. Japan's constitution also made strict restrictions on the country's military forces, the right of belligerency, and the right to war. And Japan has established the exclusively defense-oriented principle, as well as a series of rules of domestic laws. Today, however, Japan's latest defense budget has exceeded 9 trillion yen, hitting a record high for 14 consecutive years since World War II. Its defense spending per capita has reached 3 times that of China, and total defense expenditure has surged to 2% of gross domestic product, with plans to further go up to 3.5%. Military orders from the Ministry of Defense have tripled over the past 5 years since the current administration came to power. It has been accelerating the deployment of intermediate and long-range missiles, easing the export restrictions of lethal weapons, and promoting the revision of its constitution and the 3 security documents. Make sure I get that right. Security documents. By doing so, Japan seeks to further breach the international and domestic laws and challenge the post-war international order. The Japanese official you mentioned deliberately evaded Japan's historical crimes and facts stated above. He even attempted to shift blame and create confusion. Is this a sign of unease or an attempt to conceal Japan's own military expansionist ambitions? Under such circumstances, Japan's claim that it seeks dialogue is just performance and shows no sincerity at all. This year marks the 80th anniversary of the opening of the Tokyo trials, the landmark trials of justice affirmed the numerous crimes of Japanese militarism and provided the legal basis for the post-war international order. Some experts and scholars from other countries have noted that the erroneous words and deeds of Japan bear an alarming resemblance to the war preparation process of Japanese militarism exposed at the Tokyo trials and pose a threat in regional peace and to regional peace and stability. The international community must stay on high alert and jointly and firmly prevent and stop the spread of Japan's neo-militarism. This is the Taylor Report, CIT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. We're still seeking to reach Yakov Rabkin, but I'll just underline something. I don't think this topic of Japanese illegal rearmament or dreams of it and its confusing policies, as stated by their prime minister, that the woman who's now always called now, all Western media love to call her Japan's Iron Lady. It's a continuance of this idea that we now have women leaders who are reactionary, expansionist, or hegemonistically, I didn't know I could say that word, inclined. And so around the world there's this kind of celebration. Isn't it wonderful? We have this person who is such is going to be harsh, cold, mean, Now, that's the kind of person we need now, apparently. And she was very much an admirer of Donald Trump, by the way. These are tendencies that I don't see the Canadian media even interested in. How can people talk casually about the possibility of Japan developing a nuclear weapon or long-range missiles? Or becoming one of the ways they get into this is by export of offensive military weapons. Canada, certainly Canadians, forget the government, the Canadians' population would definitely think this is an issue. But it's only an issue, of course, if our political, for lack of a better word, elites define it as an issue. As a professor of mine used to say, a problem is only a problem if you define it as a problem. So they say, oh, this is not a problem. Actually, it is a problem. For as China is not speaking only in its own name, people of the Philippines are very concerned. People of Vietnam are concerned.